FBI Studios. This is Truth and Justice, a crowdsourced investigation in real time. I'm Bob Roth. Becky Friedley and Robert Pape. These two people have been the main characters in this story since we began this journey. A quick glance into Becky's victimology and timeline led us directly to a planned hike that was supposed to occur right around the time of the murders. In our analysis so far, it's really up in the air as to whether the hike actually happened or if it was canceled, like Robert says. Personally, I'm leaning towards it being canceled. While we only have Robert's word to work from, in his interview, he didn't present me any reason to believe that he was lying, and on multiple occasions leaked out information that demonstrates that he really has no knowledge of how or why the murders occurred. We're definitely going to circle back to Robert Pape, but for the time being, the scorned ex-boyfriend narrative doesn't seem to hold water. Which means that we need to continue digging into the victimology of not only Becky, but also of John and Vicky. Are there more risk factors that were tossed aside by the original investigators? I believe that there are. This is Season 12, Episode 5, A Broader Look.
Texas Ranger James Holland is a legendary interrogator. They call him the serial killer whisperer.
You can't hide those indications, and that's why yesterday I knew that you did it.
But now, shocking interrogation tapes reveal how the super cop really operates.
And that's why they asked me to come in, because I'm special.
From Something Else, The Marshall Project, and Sony Music Entertainment, this is Smokescreen. Just say you're sorry. Listen and follow on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts.
You've seen the film. You know the game. Now, Jumanji just got real. Only at Chessington World of Adventures. Featuring Daredevil Dad, Mom on a mission, and the kids who can't wait to ride the world's first Jumanji roller coaster. An epic adventure awaits. World of Jumanji. Only at Chessington World of Adventures. Book this summer's must-do day out at Chessington.com.
I've spent most of this week listening through police interviews, many of which do not have reports attached to them. Without reports, the only way for me to determine who each person being interviewed is was to listen to them. Hours and hours of them. Throughout the process, I was able to find a few needles in this massive haystack of a police file that open up a few cans of worms when it comes to victimology and risk factors. But before we dig into that, I want to share with you this short excerpt from an interview with a man named Randy Paulson. Randy lived in Pinyon Pines, sort of between Tim Summerlee and the crime scene. He was there that night, and listen to what he told police.
So I look out the window, and I see it like,
you turn the radio down.
It's like in flames, right? So I get dressed, and I went over there with my wife, and I met Artis Ellie's husband, Tim Summerlee.
Right.
And I don't know if you talked to him, but
yeah.
He was there, like, I guess he was one of the first ones there.
Right.
And, you know, he's my friend. He was telling me, hey, I saw it was on fire. I looked around, and in the back, I saw a wheelbarrow that what looked to me, is what he was saying, like a body, kind of like in this form. Like, was it burned? He said, yeah. And I got out of him that it was, I guessed, about 50 feet from the house. So right away I'm thinking, well, that body didn't burn in the house. And get there, or for whatever reason, that's
right.
Suspicious.
I agree.
So by that time the fire trucks were there, and shortly after that some deputies came in. And that's pretty much it. And I just told them, hey, you know, they're going to want to talk to you.
Right.
And because it's going to be a crime scene.
What's particularly relevant here in Randy's interview is that Tim Summerlee told him about the body in the wheelbarrow. And that's important to us because we now know that there are other possible sources for that information to have gotten to Javier and ultimately to Robert Pape. It didn't necessarily have to come from Javi's father. It seems a fair assumption that if Tim told Randy, that he likely told some of the other neighbors. And who knows who else Randy told. The bottom line is that the detail about the body in a wheelbarrow wasn't quite as top secret as the police have made it out to be. In my searches this week, I came across an interview with Tim Rutherford. Tim was John Hayward's boss, so to speak. John was a self-employed contractor, but it seems like he contracted most of his services to Tim and his property management company. I had planned to clip out the relevant portions of this interview, but there's just way too much information and it's all intermingled together. So what you're about to hear next is a 20-minute portion of the interview. And in this 20 minutes, you're going to learn a lot about John and Vicky. A lot more than most people have ever heard, including the jury in this case. Here's Tim's interview.
Are anomalies to general everyday life. We've known him for 10 years. In the last 3 months, as he started to do things weird, not showing up, money gone missing, asked for advances. I mean, money, drugs, women, those are usually the three things.
Yeah, no,
or should I say money, drugs, relationships?
None of those. Are you aware that they just came into an inheritance?
Sort of.
$175,000.
Yeah. And that's one of our concerns. And so I'd like to get some background on that since the family knows them probably far less than you do. Family hasn't seen them since Christmas.
Vicky's side. It came from Vicky's side, but I don't know where. Vicky inherited it from somebody or somehow.
$175,000?
The amount is correct, I believe, because we heard that a lot of times from John. And they were having trouble getting it, but we kind of heard that they were going to get it like a month ago, wasn't it?
I heard he had recently gotten it.
When did this all start? Where did this come to pass? When did you first hear about it?
I heard about probably a year ago.
Whoever died, it was like, I would say a year, maybe even a little longer than that. Maybe
yeah,
a year and
possible.
A half.
And but it wasn't John's family? I know his brother passed away in 2003.
I know his brother died.
Tom? I don't know his name, but okay. I remember him telling us about that, but I don't think it was from him.
Okay.
I think it was Vicky's side.
And Alyssa would know better than I would. Alyssa's my daughter, by the way.
Okay.
And John Bart has been here for all the time John Hayward has.
And Rutherford also?
Yeah.
Is it
A-L-I-S-A.
Okay. Can I just get everyone's birthday so I have...
Sure.
And yours, John... What's
Barta.
Your...
B-A-R-T-A.
That's... And Alyssa. Okay.
But, no, I would say... Absolutely nothing. He worked for us. He was actually staining the side of my building here. The sun hits the wood, and he came in and said, "Ted, you need to stain that." I said, "Go ahead." So he was staining that, and he actually just finished the staining. Didn't even get the mail slot put back in. That was the only thing he had left to do on it, and that was right up till the last day. Was he here Friday? Did he come to work Friday?
Devin said he thinks he saw him on Friday. Wasn't Friday the day Vicky came in? Vicky
yes,
was
it
off
was.
Work.
Yep, Vicky
she
did
was
come
work
here Friday.
She came in.
Yeah.
I think that was Friday.
Was that Friday?
Yeah.
It was Thursday
it
or Friday that
Friday,
Vicky was in here.
Friday.
And I was sitting at the desk, and Vicky came in and said, "Ted, I love your office. We just moved into this at the end of March, 1st of April." And she said, "I love it." And I said, "Well, go tell your honey because he's the one that did it. He did the whole thing." And John, I believe, was in the kitchen at the time, maybe getting a drink or doing something.
Both
I don't know
here.
What. And Vicky went in to see him. Now,
was
that was Thursday or Friday. Could you look
Friday.
And see if you had to on paychecks when you paid him last? Could you tell if it was Friday?
I don't know, but Vicky said she was off work that day, so you could probably look at Vicky's work schedule if you really wanted to know. She's like, "Oh, I got a day off."
But there was absolutely nothing wrong between them. They were very compatible.
He recently did work at Angelica's house, my girlfriend, and you know, he's the same as he always had been. There was nothing different that I could
see. No, obviously, was he a drinker?
Nothing.
Occasionally, heavy drinker, light drinker, non-drinker?
I've never seen him take a drink, ever. Now, how would we
socialize you're drinking
with them.
Here or hanging out at the barbecues at your house or something?
We don't socialize, so I wouldn't have any idea what he does at home. And when he left here, he would go up that hill, and he was kind of isolated. That was, he loved it up there.
That's a common theme.
He would come down the hill and say, snowed at my place last night. I mean, just, you know, he loved that place up there. He really did.
Mm-hmm.
But I can honestly say that I saw zero difference in him in the last, I mean, he hasn't changed in years.
Me neither, I think.
And certainly nothing in the last few weeks. And although Becky wasn't his daughter, he sure loved Becky. And she would come in here all the time, and I'd say, hey, Becky's here. He said, oh, God, what's this going to cost me? But he would say it jokingly, you know, like, my daughter's here. And she was always here, or usually here, to get some money from her. But he thought of her as his daughter. I mean, it was his daughter.
Well, they've been together for quite some time.
Yeah.
What can you tell me about Becky? Other than her bubbly personality.
Always smiling that I saw. Other than that, you knew her more than
one of the happiest gals you'd ever want to meet.
She went to camp with us, so I've been involved with the Y for a long time. So she went to camp and the Y, you know, so I'm talking about when she was 12.
Right.
You know, and...
She moved away at one point.
She moved away and she lived with her dad.
When was that?
She was going to go to... Well, she graduated high school somewhere not here, which was just...
Not that long ago.
No, she's only going to be 19.
Right.
No, I think it said in the paper, 05. So, like, she moved away right where he lived. And she was going to some modeling thing, I think, down here. And then she went up to wherever he lives, and she finished high school there. But apparently that didn't pan out because she came back. And she was working. I know she was working at nighttime, like the graveyard.
Well, when you say her dad, do you mean...
No,
Juan?
Her dad. Yeah, not okay. John, whoever her dad is.
Right.
I don't know him.
Okay.
Yeah, we've never met.
Right. No, I think she actually finished high school with her mom's previous boyfriend before John.
Oh, really?
Because he lived, like, in, I've seen it 10 times today, but I can't think of it. Signal Hill.
Well, I don't know. I thought
Long
she went from Long Beach.
It's not, though. I want to say Signal Hill, but it's...
Well, I never, this is the first I've ever heard about another boyfriend. I thought it went from...
It was long before.
I thought it went from the policeman to John. I didn't know there was something in the middle.
I think there was, but it was short, like a year, maybe a year or two, I don't know. Because her and the policeman have been separated for quite some time.
Yeah, like 10 years or something.
Yeah, or more, if not more.
Yeah.
They were pretty young.
She came in one day about, I would say, 2 months ago.
So Becky or
Becky? And she said, I said, you're looking awful happy. She said, I got a job at Yard House.
Oh, yeah.
I said, you do? Mm-hmm. And she would come in and say, Ted, you can't believe those drunks that come in at night. She'd work the midnight, 11 till 7 in the morning or something. So she got all
Denny's,
those guys at
all
Denny's.
Places, right.
Yeah. So John, she got a kitchen job.
Who didn't get a connection, love connection at the bar.
Right.
He's now at Denny's.
Well, she said she was going to Yard House, and I never ever asked after that if she did or if she worked there. Did you ever hear?
She was in the running for a couple different jobs, and she actually got hired at, I don't remember if it was Outback or one of those kind of places, and a girl that she knew and they didn't get along from in high school or whatever were both hired.
Mm-hmm.
And in the process of them not getting along previously, the other girl said something to the manager about her, and she said, that's not true. And he went, you know what? I don't need drama. You're both gone. So neither of them got the job.
Mm-hmm.
But I just heard that today. So
yeah.
There was a couple things she was going back for interviews on. She'd already been interviewed and was going back for like the final thing. So.
Yeah.
Hi, Jim. Hey, I was coming back.
Oh, good.
I thought that you guys had up there for like a week and a half, 2 weeks.
Maybe. Dave, this is Jim Snellenberger.
Hi.
How are you doing? And John did all the work on Jim's building.
Okay.
So Jim found out yesterday, I guess I told you, wasn't it?
Yeah, he told me, yeah.
It's sad. And nothing, you didn't have any real direct contact with him.
Just made it a couple times with you.
Well, Dave is a homicide detective, and he's interviewing us on whatever we could add to whatever information they have. Did you need us for anything else?
No, I was just going to ask her one question about the tax bill to see if she...
I didn't even look it up yet.
No, you need to ask him, though. What about...
I already did.
Okay.
Know about it.
Okay, because we don't know anything about...
The pump bill.
Yeah.
We know nothing about the extra charge.
Well, either do I.
Okay.
So, he's going to battle it out with you guys.
Okay.
Thanks, Jim.
And give you a good reason why, but I can't think of any because he put it in the wrong place. And then he moved it. Yeah. And then he didn't get paid for moving it because he put it in the wrong place. That's all I know about it.
All right, guys.
Bye-bye.
So, all those things being said, no reason, no indication. I mean, had he talked about what they were planning on doing with the inheritance? Since that could be a factor.
He's talked a couple times about going to Oregon.
Yeah, but he's selling here when they got the inheritance, about selling here
yeah.
and moving up north somewhere. Was it Oregon?
I think it was Oregon.
He got his license here because he said California is the hardest place to get it, and then moved to Oregon because once you had
he'll transfer, right.
But he also told me that he did not want to give up that place up there. He liked it that much.
Hmm. He loved his place.
He really did. Like the seclusion. He really did. But he mentioned moving a couple times that I heard, but that's...
So the last time you saw him at work...
Was either Thursday or Friday? You think it was Friday?
I think it was Friday.
I can tell you when I have to check.
Yeah. I'm almost positive.
You want to go
Friday?
You want to go have
sure.
a look? Yeah, just to be safe. Let's tell him exactly.
I think
so. I have a definite time.
Yeah.
But I called him on the weekend, got the voicemail, and then...
We called him.
Called him on Monday...
We called him on Monday.
Before I knew this, and still straight to voicemail. And he's very good about calling back if you called him and left a message.
Mm-hmm.
We have a mobile home that we need a serial number off of, and he was supposed to get it for us, and he knows where to look.
Right.
It's on a property that we sold, a big acreage, but it's got this stupid damn mobile home on it. And he was going to go get the serial number. He said, I know where to get it. So we were phoning him on Monday to say, John, I need to get that serial number.
Right.
I'm getting ready to close escrow.
9:15, when was that?
9:15. Thursday? I don't know.
Let me look. That's when we wrote the check. But I can't...
No, Friday.
Oh, it is?
Friday, September 15th. Yep.
I don't know that that's the day Ricky was here, though. I mean, I don't... Because Devin wrote the check, really.
Is that the day the check was written, or just the day they would date it?
No.
The day we wrote the check.
We always date it.
So let me ask you this. Can you get online somewhere and see if that check's been cashed?
Yes.
Sure. Do you know the account number?
No. I don't know the account number.
Oh, you don't know it? What is it? What account is it? Is it mine? I got it.
I can just look online.
Welcome to Bank of America.
Sure, especially if it's sometime after Sunday.
For balances, account activity, transfers, and other services, please enter your 10-digit
savings. Okay, I'm going to print it out anyway. This doesn't print it out.
That's fine. Yeah, no, just...
Can I tell you, he used to bank somewhere else, and he would take our paychecks in, and we'd probably pay him, and Alyssa would know better, but I would think we probably pay him $60,000 to $70,000 a year on all the different.
He charges by the hour, or is it by the job?
By the hour,
okay.
Always by the hour, so we paid him a lot of money. So we were obviously important to him. He was banking somewhere else. I forget where, and he would take his checks in, and he'd say, "Hey, could you do a break it and give me a small one? I'll go cash it." I said, "What do you need cash?" He said, because my bank puts a hold. I said, oh, for God's sake, John, go down, open a bank account at B of A.
Right.
So, because that's where we bank. And
right.
So he did that, and he's been with B of A now for, I told them about this, they didn't know about it. And all the tellers in there all know John, because he's been going in there for years, you know, at least once a week, sometimes twice a week.
Okay.
But, no, he banked.
So would you cut him
now.
Checks individually, or did you pay him every week, like a payroll check?
We paid him, he would get like four checks, because in a week we would have him work on Indio Plaza Center, Indio Industrial Center, Valley Service Center, Jim Snellenberg.
And different checks for each job?
Right, because
so
each
you
building,
would be checking your money.
Right, would get a, each building would get a different check.
Easier for you.
Well, we have to do it that way because different owners own those buildings.
Right.
So we have to write
bills. That's what I meant.
Yeah.
As opposed to you just taking care of it all and then dealing with the owners.
Yeah.
Got you.
Yeah. No.
Okay. Well.
And just a good personality, kind of quiet.
I can't even imagine anything.
When you stay quiet?
I just can't. I would not know anybody that would not.
If he had any bad habits, it was that he smoked. I mean, he smoked a lot.
You know,
right.
What he did at home, we don't know.
Right,
no
right, idea. And unfortunately, that's the case with everybody that knows them.
Mm-hmm.
Even folks that potentially know them really well don't know them very well.
Yeah,
because
sure.
That's the kind of folks they are. They live up there where there's no cell phones. They don't work up there. Period.
No, nope. Cell phone doesn't work.
So if you're not at home, you can't get a hold of them.
Yeah.
So that you know, there you are.
Yeah.
If you don't catch them before you leave here on Friday, you won't hear from them until Monday.
That's right.
All right. Okay.
And you
same
wrote,
day.
He cashed it same day?
Yeah.
Or deposited it or whatever?
Posted the same day.
Okay. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And can I tell you, it's Dave, right?
Yes.
Dave, if I had to say, if you want to know what his financial condition was like,
looks like,
he couldn't get through a weekend very long without his paychecks. Every once in a while, Alyssa would be away on a Friday. I would be away on a Friday, and that's payday. He would be a little panicky. And I said to John, just whatever he gives you, just pay it. Don't question it. Just go ahead and write it, because John's almost, it's never that the three of us are away.
Right.
So he would come in, but he couldn't get through a weekend. And there were a couple of times where I advanced him money, you know, where I would say,
I had several advances.
He would say, Ted, could you advance me $1,000 and or 500 or whatever?
Mm-hmm.
Never, was it ever even a thousand?
I don't think 1,000. I think
maybe 500. And we didn't care. $500 didn't mean anything. And he's working on a job out of a building, so we'd pay out of that building and mark it as an advance. Then when he would submit us the final bill,
it's deductible.
If it was $700, he only gets two.
Sure.
Know? So we did that, would you say five times?
Oh, I'd say more than that.
Maybe more over the years?
15.
But that's over a period of 8 or 10 years, so.
Recently?
No.
Anything that you can think of?
No. I haven't done it recently.
He hasn't.
Ever. Any idea why?
Maybe he got that money.
No. I mean, any idea why he couldn't get through a weekend without his check?
Well, can I tell you? Let me tell you what the difference is. How long has Vicky been working?
I don't know.
Vicky
well,
did not work for a long time.
For a long time.
She was going to school, remember? She was going to CLD.
Yeah, but wasn't she working also?
Well, whatever it is, I think Vicky got a more permanent job at Robinson May that's
mm-hmm.
turned into Macy's.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I mean, I think before that, it was just John's income.
She was going to school. She wanted to do something. She said she changed her mind all the time. First, she wanted to do something computery, then she wanted to do, you know, some other random thing,
mm-hmm.
whatever. But she really was into computers.
But anyway, he hasn't asked for money for, I would say, a year and a half, two years?
No.
So,
six months.
No stories of
she
trips.
Would know.
Did he ever go on trips?
Never.
Vacation?
No.
Ever?
They just went a couple month or two ago to San Diego for 3 days or something.
That would be
three
a big
days.
Trip for
yeah.
them. But they didn't go
That's
to
That's what
Europe
I mean. They weren't going to
no.
Laughlin. There weren't gambling trips involved.
No.
Oh,
anything that would have somebody looking for you for any reason is what we're
Can
looking
I tell
for.
You, we run a pool. We have a pool that we do. We put $100 in every year.
Uh-huh.
I know. And then you pick all the football games for the whole, for every week
sure.
you pick all the games. He's been in it forever, and he didn't get in it this year. And he just is not, he doesn't like gambling. I mean, really, he's not into it.
That big deal.
Well, then $100, he didn't want to put the $100 up, and the son of a bitch, he won it.
He even told
me to get his money back.
He says, I never got NFL ticket, whatever that football package
right.
is. He was getting that the last couple of years.
Oh, yeah, with the DirecTV or whatever.
Yeah, he did not get that.
And this is the first year in probably 10 years he hasn't been in the pool.
Yeah.
He didn't get in this year.
It was very strange. I thought it was real strange.
I thought that was strange, too, that he didn't get in the pool. I mean, I don't know what that
he
means.
He always talked football.
But he just, and he didn't get the NFL package? He's an NFL nut.
Yeah.
So for him not to get the NFL package, that surprises me.
I was surprised he didn't get in the pool. Because $100, I mean, $70,000 a year.
Right.
$100.
And just before
that's dinner, Morton's.
Go farther
yeah.
with that.
Yeah.
Is it about $60,000 to $70,000 a year that we would pay him out of all the various things?
I don't know, but I can look that up for you too if you want.
Just so I have a number,
yeah.
that would be helpful. It doesn't have to be the painting.
Well, I can tell you exactly what it's.
If it's 40, it'd be nice if it was
year.
40. If it was 140,
yeah.
that'd be good enough. Just so we have an
you
idea.
You want to know last year?
Because we'll be checking into the
year.
Outflow.
You probably want to know this year.
This
you
year would be easier,
and
I can just divide
well,
it.
Well, last year we have 1099.
Yeah, last
just
year.
Copy for you. But
that's well, yeah, I don't need copies of anything. You can just tell me, that's fine.
Okay.
Last year,
you
just
want
look.
An email address?
Just look and tell me. I have it.
Hayward
2.
Yeah.
And I just talked to two people today. That just one of them just said, I was just trying to reach him. They never knew anything about this. You know, they just didn't read it in the paper.
What about his family?
I don't know a thing about John's family.
Never met any of them. His son never came by. His daughter's never came by.
Alyssa said, Dad, you met the son once. And I thought, yeah, I think I did. But it was probably 6 years ago.
Oh, so he was a young kid.
Yeah.
So he's like 19 or something now.
I think we've met all the. I think we've met all of John's and all of Vicky's family over the years. But it was just, hey, Ted, meet so-and-so. And then that would be a 10-second
thing. Gotcha. Okay.
So I don't think other than that we know him. And Alyssa is would probably know him a little better. I don't know if she had any more of them at the YMCA camp.
Right.
She might have.
Okay.
This, she was a sexy little thing, his daughter. Do you know that? Have you been told that?
Yeah, we've heard that from some folks. Was, some of the guys
and
knew them
because
please,
I don't mean that
bother.
Rude. I don't mean that rude. You know, she would be large-breasted, cute body, cute attitude, really a fun
very
attitude.
Good personality.
Like, I would think very, there'd be a lot of guys very interested in Becky.
Well, yeah, that was the case. There were quite a few people looking to date her or whatever.
Yeah.
But I don't know of any. John and Vicky.
Vicky was always happy. I never saw
Yeah, you can see how Becky
happy.
Got it. Vicky
yeah.
just always laughing.
Yeah.
Always had a smile.
I never saw Becky unhappy, ever.
And John, you didn't see smile much, but he wasn't unhappy. He just wasn't
he's just very
gregarious,
Vicky.
You know.
Very.
But okay.
I never heard anything that would make me think that something bad was going to happen to me. No way. Surprisingly, a lot.
We learned a lot about John in this interview. He was a hard worker and quite skilled at his craft. Tim says he'd been working with him for 10 years and considered him his number one contractor. He was a nice guy by all accounts, and he was quite reliable. But Tim's interview did raise some questions in regards to victimology and risk factors. We learned that John made between $60,000 and $70,000 a year with just this contract. Now, depending on what part of the country you live in, that might sound like a lot or a little. But in this case, we know that John and Vicky's cost of living was actually pretty low. Their mortgage was under $100,000. They didn't drive fancy cars. In fact, Becky had to give Vicky a car to drive. Their general living expenses were very low compared to what you might imagine most folks living in Southern California pay. And yet you have John making $60,000 to $70,000 a year just with this contract. And from interviews with some of the neighbors in Pinyon Pines, I've learned that he did quite a bit of other work as well. Plus, Vicky worked. Their household income was certainly above $100,000 a year. And yet, we hear from Becky's friends that they were broke. They never had a lot of money. Vicky couldn't afford to buy a car, so Becky gave her hers. And we heard from Tim that John could hardly make it through the weekend without running out of money. He even on occasion asked for advances on his checks. John also wanted to cash his checks immediately, not deposit them. As far as Tim knows, John wasn't a gambler. So we have to wonder where that money was going. Typically, in situations like this, we're looking in two places for missing money: gambling or drugs. Unfortunately, we don't have enough information to rule out either possibility. Just because Tim says that he didn't gamble and he didn't participate in the betting pool doesn't necessarily mean that he doesn't. But we also have to consider that John may have had some kind of a drug problem. I've said many times before that when investigating victimology, we should always be looking for a recent change. What change that may have put a particular victim in the crosshairs of a potential offender? In Becky's case, her recent change was that she broke up with her boyfriend 2 days before the murders. And also, she seemed to start talking to her other boyfriend around that same time. And in John and Vicky's life, according to John, they were either about to or just did come into a very large sum of money. John told everyone that he worked with that he and Vicky were about to come into $175,000. All of his co-workers seemed to know that the money was supposedly coming from Vicky's side, but no one seems to know why. You can tell by the detective's reaction that he was aware of the supposed inheritance, but didn't know where it was coming from either, or didn't care to find out. But for me, alarm bells were going off when I heard this, and I immediately jumped down a rabbit hole in the police file trying to find out more. And I was shocked to find that there seems to be little to no follow-up by the police. It's painfully obvious that they never really considered that John or Vicky could have been the actual target of the attack. My search for the source of the $175,000 inheritance led me to an interview with John's ex-wife, recorded just a few days after the murders. In her interview, she fills police in on three areas that she thinks could have contributed to the murders. An ex-boyfriend of Vicky's, an angry landowner, and a bitter ex-husband.
We have a couple of things that the kids thought about.
Okay.
One is that Vicky had an old boyfriend before she and John moved in together several years ago, but through the years he has still been around and told her he wanted to get back together with her and done things for the kids, and they have even lived with him.
Okay.
And he's given them lots of things, money and that kind of thing.
Okay.
And I don't know, and Becky apparently was even living with him for a while, and Tiffany maybe too. Tiffany has actually been good friends with him. I don't know if she'd appreciate us telling her, you that, but
right.
about him. But the other thing is the kids remembered that there was, Ron had sold the other acreage attached to that area to someone up there.
Well, hey, slow down a little bit.
Oh, sorry.
The old boyfriend you're talking about, do you know his name?
Yeah, we only know his first name as being Chuck, but
okay.
He would know it. I don't know whether she'd just poo-poo it or not, but he was,
okay.
You know, the second thing is that there was a guy that Ron sold the other acreage to that was attached to the acreage, the acre and the house that the house was on. And he had been somewhat angry that they wouldn't sell to him.
And when, so when did that happen?
I don't know for sure, but it's not been just recent. And I don't know how, if he continued in the pursuit of that or not.
Right.
But, and the third thing is, and I don't know if, I'm going to have trouble saying this because I know how tight you guys are, but Ron and Vicky were bitter enemies.
Right. We were aware of that.
And,
we are aware of that, I should say.
And also, and I don't want you, please don't repeat this to him that I told you this. I mean, any of this, that we might think that he might do something like this. But there was a cash settlement available apparently from his retirement.
Right.
And they had made one installment on it, I think probably late last year, and he was fighting another installment on it and hadn't paid it that we know of.
All right.
That it said
run that by me again. I'm not sure I understand what you're saying.
Well, Vicky apparently got half of his retirement
right.
when they divorced. There was a settlement, we believe, last year, well, the first installment on it. Now, this is, obviously, I can't say that this is for sure for true, but this is what they understood from their father.
Okay.
Is that Ron was hadn't sent another, was another installment was due and he hadn't sent it and he was fighting.
Oh, you mean installment of him paying her
right,
the balance?
Right, retirement.
We understood that he was trying
it.
To buy
he was
out.
Fighting it in the courts or something.
One more time? In fourth.
Yeah.
Sorry.
He was fighting it in the court, apparently, and it, as I understand it, it might have been a substantial payment.
Right.
Now, I know I
and they,
know
so they received one, you're saying? And that's it?
As far as we know, that's as far as I know. Now, you might be able to show through records that they
sure.
could get more. But
sure.
He hadn't paid child support for a lot of years to me and owed quite a bit of money to me, and he had started, he sent a $10,000 payment, I think it was last August or October. And then, since then, I've been getting monthly checks.
Okay.
They owed me like between $40,000
and $50,000.
Pardon me?
I said yikes.
Yeah.
Okay.
But he took care of the, you know, that family over there.
Right.
And you know, I didn't pursue it. That the child support office does have record of everything, so they know what had happened. You know, but
right.
They always say look for the relatives, but I was getting money, so I don't have any motive, and I don't have any.
Right.
But I don't know. Ron and Vicky were really bitter, and she said horrible things about him. I don't know whether they're true or not, and I know he's a co-worker of yours, but...
Well, not anymore. He's not, and I had never really worked with him, so you're not going to hurt my feelings.
Okay, well, I'd hate for it to get back to that I ever said that.
No, we wouldn't share that.
Particularly if he was the man who did it.
Well, if that's the case, then that might be important information, though. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And that's not out of the realm of possibilities, so I take everything you tell me with great importance.
Okay.
Until I find out otherwise. So, what kind of things are we talking about?
Well, they're apparently, and of course, this is hearsay, and I don't know how much Vicki of it is.
Well, it's hearsay until you tell me who you heard say it.
Pardon me?
It's hearsay until you tell me who you heard say it.
Oh, well, Vicki said it to that he had been abusive during the marriage.
Uh-huh.
At one point, I mean, I heard her talk to him. I can't say that necessarily that it was all him either. She wasn't real nice to him, but that was after the divorce. I know the kids all had dance lessons together, and there had been a recital at the McCallum Theater, and they passed each other on the street, and Vicki just laid it and lashed into him, you motherfucking asshole, you know,
right.
Kind of thing. And I don't know what it was about, you know, I don't know what it was from or anything. And, of course, she was very bitter because, as I understand it, he was seeing someone when they divorced or before that. So, and again, that may color some of the things she said, and
sure.
I don't know.
Sure, but...
But I do feel that the money thing is probably pretty legitimate, whether... Okay. Anyway, those were the three things that we thought about.
Okay.
And
when did you get your money from John?
I think it was in October. The big check came in October, I believe, and he's been making monthly payments since then. But I hadn't seen any like I say, it was built up to between $40,000 and $50,000.
So last year, October?
Yes, 2005, I'm sorry.
Okay. Fine. And he's been paying you how much a month?
$388, and he sent the...
$388?
$388, uh-huh. The original, but these would all be arrears because all the children are now 18. Katie turned 18 in March.
Right, right.
So these would all be arrears.
I'll be right back.
The original payment was $550 a month from, you know, 91. And he paid a few of those, and through the years, once in a while, I'd see something a little bit. But overall, he didn't pay a lot for the first year and a half or so. And then it was kind of a surprise because I just always wrote it off. I figured if I ever won the lotto, I'd get some money, you know.
Right.
But then I think it was October, he sent a $10,000 check, and now he's been paying $388 every month.
There's a lot to absorb and process here. So let me first restate a little clearer what the first two risk factors identified here are. First, there's apparently an ex-boyfriend of Vicki's that has remained a part of Becky and Tiffany's lives throughout the years, who maybe wanted Vicki back. That's really all the information we have about the ex. His name is Chuck, and he's still around, and apparently Vicki dated him sometime between when she divorced Ron and when she started dating John. And from what I've seen so far, the police never followed up on him. Secondly, evidently Ron, Vicki's ex-husband, had sold the surrounding property to someone years ago, and that person was, I guess, angry that Vicki wouldn't sell him the house. And again, no follow-up that I've seen so far on that. And then there's Ron, Vicki's ex-husband and recently retired Riverside County Sheriff's Officer. This is the situation as I understand it. It seems that John and Vicki actually had a decent relationship with John's ex-wife. I say that because she refers to Vicki telling her directly things about her ex, Ron Friedley. While they did seem to get along, John paid very little child support from the time he divorced in 1991 until the year before the murders, 2005. The kids are all adults at the point of this interview, but John still owed close to $50,000 in back child support. Now, when Vicki divorced Ron, she was awarded half of his retirement by the court order. Now, this was back in the 90s, but the way these things work, she wouldn't get the money until he actually retired. Now, Ron did retire from the sheriff's department, I believe in 2005, just a year before the murders. According to John's ex, in October of that year, about 11 months before the murders occurred, Ron had made a payment on what he owed Vicki for that retirement. And with some of that money, John paid $10,000 to his ex-wife to make up for some of that back child support. And since then, he had been paying her $388 a month regularly. And here's where things get hairy. According to John's ex, Ron did not want to pay Vicki the remainder of what he owed her. She claims that he was fighting it in court. Now, one can only assume that this was the $175,000 that John had told his co-workers about. So I'll go ahead and state the obvious. If someone has to pay you $175,000 if you're alive, and $0 if you're dead, It's a pretty fucking big risk factor. I told you from the beginning that this case was incredibly complex, and I hope that at this point, you're starting to understand what I meant. For the Riverside County Sheriff's Office, the case wasn't complex at all. Becky was in the wheelbarrow, so Becky must have been the target. No sense in focusing on all the red flags surrounding John and Vicky, because this case had to be all about Becky. Even at trial, the state had to twist and spin and manipulate in order to make it look like Robert was some sort of scorned ex that had some kind of hidden motive to murder his ex-girlfriend and her whole family. They presented it as though it was the only possible scenario that made sense, and that's the way it's been portrayed in the media up until now. But now we see that there are most definitely other possible reasons why someone might want to attack John and Vicky. And as you're about to hear, even Becky for that matter. Her victimology most definitely does not stop with Robert. As we wrap up our segment on victimology, I'm going to present to you some new information that's never been made public before. I have no idea if this information is legitimate, so take that with a grain of salt, but this is information that the investigating officers were aware of in regards to Becky's risk factors, and they don't seem to have ever looked any further into them. Number one, there's information contained in this file that Becky had recently had an affair with the husband of one of her co-workers at Denny's. Evidently, the co-worker walked in on the two of them together and obviously wasn't thrilled. And that is a risk factor. And then there's number two, and this one's very important. There were rumors that Becky was involved with members of the Southside Indio Gang, a gang known to be extremely violent and heavily rooted in the drugs and guns market in the valley. Now, this information comes from two places. First is a game of telephone where police are interviewing a guy named Dale Turner who lives up in Pinyon Pines.
I had heard from a kid that came up on the property after the death, so I was up there talking to the family. And some kid came by to leave some flowers that was a friend of Becky's, and he said she was involved with some drug-dealing gangbangers, and that somebody wouldn't leave her alone. She was always arguing on the phone with somebody. Just leave me alone. I told you to leave me alone. Don't bother me anymore.
And the kid who dropped off the flowers, who did he tell this to?
All of us. We were all standing there.
Okay.
Told that to me and my wife and Jackie.
What day was that when he dropped
that off? That was that week after the murders.
The kid that came up to the property to bring the flowers was later identified as Alex Ahumada, an ex-boyfriend of Becky's, someone she dated between Robert and Jacob. Police later go to interview him and his mother and find out that over the summer, Becky had come by their house and her phone kept ringing off the hook. Becky was apparently crying and saying that the callers would not leave her alone. Unfortunately, in that interview, the detective doesn't ask for any more details. But in a follow-up interview with Dale Turner's wife, she tells police that Alex's mom had told her that when Becky was upset at her house, she had shared with her that it was gang members of some kind that wouldn't leave her alone. But like I said, that's a game of telephone. Becky supposedly told Alex's mom, who supposedly told Mrs. Turner, who told police, which leaves this element in the category of unverified, obviously. But there's another source who provides similar information, which makes me wonder if there's smoke, maybe there's fire. Through another game of telephone, the police land on a man named Scott Myers. Scott was the roommate of Jackie Grosjean, who was the closest neighbor to the Friedley house. Her house was located just to the west of theirs. In the weeks following the murder, Scott was around quite a bit helping the family clean up and sort through the remnants of the house. And Scott also spent some time on Yahoo Messenger, the 2006 version of a dating app. Apparently, in the weeks following the murders, he was chatting online with a woman from the Valley whose daughter went to school with Becky.
Were you communicating with anybody who may know information about what happened?
I have talked to some people on the internet, and one girl had told me that her daughter knew of Becky, didn't know Becky, but she said she was involved with some stuff with gangs, that she was dating some gang members, and other than that, no, that maybe, and I don't want to get involved, and I know how these gangs are around here, and if they find out, I'd probably die, but I mean, I'm more worried about catching who did it. I don't care who they are, because three people are dead from this, and you know, I've heard Southside Indio, she was involved with Southside Indio somehow or some way.
You heard that from who?
A person on the internet that I've never met, just from talking to her on the internet.
Yeah. And what did this person say exactly?
She said that maybe the cops should go to the high schools and they would find out more from kids that she was involved with, but she said she didn't know her. She never knew Becky, that her daughter knew of Becky but didn't know her, and she had heard something as far as maybe Southside Indio was involved.
Why?
She didn't say.
How did the conversation come up? And, I mean, it was just, were you online like MySpace or?
No, it was on Yahoo that I met this girl, because I used to, when I was, you know, before I got into rehab, I was on Yahoo and I searched for girls local and stuff, and then I met her, and then I went to rehab, then I came back and was talking to her, and she said her kid had known of Becky, you know, and her ways were not good. She would be always hanging out with gang members and stuff like that, Southside Indio gang, and...
What's this lady's name?
I don't even know. I don't know. Sherry, I think. But I don't, I mean, it's like anything else. I don't know that I trust what she's saying about it.
Well, how did Becky's name even come up in a conversation that you're having?
Because I was living up there next to where it happened.
Well, that's kind of what we're getting. Why or how did this conversation come up? I mean, did someone say, do you know Becky, or did you tell her a story about something?
Yeah, I told her the story of she said she had asked one time where I was living, and at that point I was living up on the mountain, and she said, well, my daughter knew of her, and she thought that maybe Southside Indio. And then when I was trying to get a hold of you before, she was telling me online, you know, that the things that I've told you about Southside Indio and that she was involved in gangs and stuff like that, I had asked her again, and I told her that I was going to talk to you guys, and she said nothing. She stopped. She won't say nothing. I mean, I can get online right now and talk to her, and she won't say anything. You know, and I think I don't know if she knows more or if she's afraid, like anybody would be with a gang, you know, to get involved in that kind of stuff.
Well, what exactly did she say when she said, oh, yeah, my daughter, was it?
Yeah, her daughter.
My daughter knew Becky.
Was her age, and, you know, she's maybe 17. I don't even know her daughter's real age, but she had said that, that's basically all, that she was involved with the gang, that maybe they should look into Southside Indio. And that's what she said. And then
Did you ask her, why are you saying this? Or?
I think I did, and she stopped. She quit talking about it because she's afraid. Like,
oh, she brought it up.
Right. I mean, I know. And she won't say anything about it anymore.
No, I mean, in the same time you had this conversation, I mean, she says, you know, Southside Indio, and then you would think you would ask why you say that, or you would have some response. So what's her response to that?
I think she just quit talking about it. I mean, this was 3 weeks ago, 2 weeks ago.
Some of what we heard today very well could be nothing more than rumors. We just have no way of knowing one way or the other at this point. But none of these things should be ignored, nor should they have been ignored by the original investigating officers. As this season moves along and we begin to investigate potential suspects, we'll be circling back to all of this. But for now, I would just ask that you keep an open mind. It seems extremely likely at this point that John, Vicky, and Becky all had some significant risk factors that far outweigh an ex-boyfriend and typical teenage drama. We now have as complete of a picture as we can have regarding victimology, and so it's time to move on to the next step of our investigation, the crime scene. That's next week on Truth and Justice. Truth and Justice is an NBI Studios production and is distributed by Wondery. Edited by Mike Bussing and sound engineered by Shane Yoder. All music for the show was created, composed, and scored by PutThemInASong.com, who also mixed and mastered this episode. All of our fonts across all of our logos and banners were created by Tate Krupa of Red Swan Graphic Design, and you can find more of Tate's work on Etsy. Thank you to Katie Ross of CreatedInTandem.com for designing, creating, managing, and maintaining our website, TruthAndJusticePod.com. where you can view all photos and documents discussed in every episode. And a big thank you to our transcription team, Pamela Westby, Kathy McElhaney, Kay Wood Yomnick, Ginger Fiola, Erica Cantor, Danielle Rohr, Jennifer Ford, Courtney Wimberly, and Melissa Cardenas. And as always, thank you to all of you for all of your engagement and support. If you like the show and you'd like to support us, you can do so in several ways. To financially support the show, the best thing you can do is just go to patreon.com/truthandjustice. You'll not only be supporting the show, but you'll get something in return. On Patreon, you can pledge as little as $3 a month, and we have reward levels. For just $5 a month, you get access to ad-free versions of all of our episodes and behind-the-scenes bonus video content every week. Then other reward levels include t-shirts, hats, and even the opportunity to co-host one of our Friday follow-up episodes. Just go to patreon.com/truthandjustice. You can also do us a huge favor by going to iTunes and leaving us a 5-star rating and review. And lastly, you can always support us by supporting the brands that sponsor this program. If you have a new case that you'd like us to consider for future seasons, you can submit your cases on our website, truthandjusticepod.com. Just click on the case submission button and fill out the form. And the most important thing that you can do is to engage in our investigations. You can keep in touch with us through our email at theories@truthandjusticepod.com. You can like our Facebook page or join in on the conversation on the Truth and Justice Podcast fans page on Facebook. And for all you tweeters out there, you can connect with us on Twitter @TruthJusticePod. And I can be found personally on all forms of social media @BobRuffTruth. And don't forget that we always have our 24/7 voicemail line open for questions, comments, or tips on our cases. That phone number is 269-224-2833. However you do it, stay engaged, stay in touch. But as for now, I'm signing off. I'm Bob Ruff, and this has been Truth and Justice. ¶¶